Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and today I am joined, by the Chris Farley to my David Spade, A1, Mr. Brian E. Roach. Brian, housekeeping. How you doing, buddy?
I deny this. This is no longer a relevant comparison. It may have been at one point in my life, but I am no longer Farley-esque. I veto this. Veto.
It's all right, man. Like, come on, Richard. Did you eat paint chips as a child? Oh, man. I got so many, you know, I think we're all going kind of insane. Everybody being locked down, mostly wherever you are. Most of us are anyways. I'm in Ohio, so our governor is just like shut down everything. In fact, I made a joke on Facebook, maybe in poor taste. I said, I know it's a little late, but I think I'm going to give up everything for Lent. So
there you go.
Yeah, because, you know, it's very sincere when you don't have a choice. But hey, I'm covering all the bases here, you know. Speaking of, you know, things that are almost in poor taste and jokes, but some people may want to fast forward, but we're going to have a slow start to this show just because I'm going crazy over here. So my wife sends me, she's a big fan of the show Friends, and yes. and somebody had made the meme. You know the memes, Brian?
I've heard of the memes.
You know, the memes. You know what our dynamic is kind of like? We should have started with David Letterman and Paul Schaefer. And that could probably work for either one of us, like, you know.
I'm content to be either one of those fine gentlemen. I miss them dearly.
I think Dave's been off his rocker for about 20 years, but yeah, that suits you just fine, I think. So, but anyways, the Friends. See what I mean? Now I'm channeling my inner Letterman. Have you heard of the memes? Have you heard of the memes, Paul or Brian? So anyways, this is the Friends theme song. So no one told you life was going to be this way. Your job's remote, you're broke, you're hiding from a plague. It's like you're always stuck in quarantine. You might be there for days, a week, a month, or even a year.
Now, I like it.
I only wish I could sing it, but she sends me that, and I'm like, well, you should have saw what I sent my one buddy. And he, I sent him because he's finally working remote here, right? And I said, hold your breath, make a wish, count to three. Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure isolation. Take a look and you'll see into your isolation. If anybody knows that one, that's
little Gene Wilder.
Little Gene Wilder, a little Charlie in the Chocolate Factory there. And you'll be in a world of pure isolation, not imagination, although it feels like imagination sometimes. So, and you know, when you're substituting these words for different songs, you come up with entirely like off topic things, such as baby sharks. Baby shark. Never mind. Anyways, yeah, baby shark is just not very good.
That's a totally different thing.
Appealing. But you know what? That's some of the things we're going to go over today. It could fall into the, you know, shark category on some of the hot takes and the questions. And we kind of pared this down and massaged it because, you know, some people are actually happy out there. I'm kind of surprised. Like, the Eric Ebron news was pretty well taken and everything like that. But before we, you know, get into all of this, we do have maybe a more somber note to address here for our listeners and everyone out there in Steelers Nation. Former Steelers defensive coach, a linebackers coach, and a defensive coordinator from the 70s and 80s, Woody Weidenhofer, passed away 2 days ago, I'm sorry. He was 77 years old. You know, I don't want to get into this for the sake of, you know, the family, and, you know, we offer our condolences, but someone had reached out, and we were planning on speaking to Woody here in the very near future. It was probably even going to be maybe this show, which is, you know, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And we had heard last week that, you know, the brakes were put on it just because, you know, we'd heard he was in the hospital and thought it wasn't anything anything too serious, but unfortunately, he had passed away. So again, you know, our thoughts go out to family members. We know that some of those folks tune in and listen to this show too. So it's, you know, that one's a little close to home, Brian. It's you know, what else can you say about it? You know, all these different things are, you know, going on. And by no means does this have, was there any indication that this is tied in with the current, you know, COVID-19 or anything like that? So don't make any assumptions there. We're not saying that, but just, you know, paired with everything else that's going on in the world, man, it was really, a kick between the legs, I would say.
Yeah, it was definitely saddening to hear. I had been, you know, looking forward to being able to have those conversations. You know, it's not often you get to talk to, you know, a guy who's been that close to somebody like Chuck Knoll. And you know, when they had reached out to us, they said he's got a lot of great stories to tell. And we really were looking forward to hearing some of them. And, you know, not for just that reason are we saddened. I mean, it's just, you know, you always are saddened for anybody. Because that's not that old an age, and I can say that.
I know.
So as you said, our condolences definitely go out to the family. We're really definitely very sorry to hear, and our best wishes go to them in this time of, you know, I guess grief.
Yeah, certainly. So, but on that note, I mean, how do I go? We're on the highs and lows and the peaks and the valleys here, but I felt that one was like kind of important. I know we don't always address, like, you know, everyone that passes, or, you know, even like other milestones, birthdays and people who have kids, or, you know, a birth in the family or anything like that. But that one was like really, that one really shocked me. It just seemed like, you know, he was raring to go, and, just wanting to, you know, share some of his stories, get his name back out there, maybe even resume coaching. And so that was very sad to see the news broke. I first saw it from Ed Bouchette. So, you know, condolences once again to that family. And, you know, now we're at this point where I said, hey, if you had fast forwarded, you probably just caught this part of it after our silliness. But we have something here. This is what we're going to name it, at least for now. We used to do this a lot on the website in a written format with all of our contributors, and we called it Duel Opinions, almost kind of like a duel, like Wild West duel, gun duel, or, you know, I don't know, what else is there? Medieval knights, that was a duel. That was a joust. I don't know. Maybe they dueled too. They threw the gauntlet, right?
Sure.
So it doesn't mean two. It means maybe opposing opinions here, but we're going to address some different hot takes and burning questions from Steelers Nation. And again, we kind of pared it down because there is a lot of nonsense. This isn't the same as the Pet Peeve Show, which we said like over a week ago we were gonna do this, kind of the burning questions type thing, but everybody calls it burning questions, so we have to be a little bit different here. And I guess, you know, this isn't even really a question. I guess this is just, you know, more a statement. How in the heck, you know, I'm looking at this free agency stuff, and the Steelers kiss stealing, wheeling, and dealing like my man Ric Flair. I have no idea how Kevin Colbert does this. Somebody in the comments section had mentioned, get this guy like a fine wine or a scotch as a gift, because it's like they went from having like no cap space to like all these other teams. They're like lower down the chart here, and they created all of this stuff. Eric's right. The cap's a myth. Kevin Colbert goes out, and they end up signing guys like Eric Ebron and making trades, and I have no idea how he does it. You want to talk about wizardry. Are you okay over there, buddy?
I am good. I'm sorry. I threw my Fairlife High Protein Shake empty bottle in the trash.
Oh, did you make it?
No, it was a pre-mix. I enjoyed
it. No, I didn't.
46 grams of protein.
Grams?
Yeah,
gams,
legs.
Grown-ass
46
man.
Grams. She's got beautiful gams.
No, I meant, did you make the basket? I couldn't tell if it like went in or hit the rim.
I am a skilled trash can basketball player, my friend.
The 46 grams of protein. Man, that packs a lot of protein, man. So anyways, yeah, I make my own shakes. You know why? Because I'm a man. We're getting way off track here. How in the heck did Kevin – I know how he created cap space, but it's more or less – did you think – I understand the CBA went through, and this was a huge kicker to all this happening, as we kept telling everyone to be patient. Just be patient. Wait this out. But even myself, I didn't imagine – in a million years, that Kevin Colbert would be able to do this much and make the moves that they did already this offseason.
Well, I tell you, you know, you just can't undervalue the fact of the CBA going through. Had the CBA not gone through, we're talking a totally different set of scenarios because Colbert doesn't have anything to work with. He can't restructure guys. Now the only alternative he has is to cut loose people. And, you know, we were thrown by a couple things that he did. You know, I don't think, as I think we've talked about already, I don't think we foresaw him cutting Mark Barron. With the amount of snaps Barron was getting in the previous season, we kind of thought, all right, they'll probably be keeping him around. But as the professor of football likes to bring up often, one of the things we don't know is how much they like Ulysses Gilbert. And, you know, apparently, maybe they like him quite a bit, you know, or someone else on it's in that room, because they sure enough did let Mark Barron go, and on top of that, all the other, you know, wizardly things. This is what I think may have happened, and you can correct me if you think I'm incorrect here. I think he broke into the offices of PFF. And and stole one of their wizarding books, some wizardly book in the Pro Football Focus's offices called "The Cap Is a Myth." And how dare you ever say Eric is right about anything? Yes, but
shame, shame, shame!
How dare
shame.
You?
Yes.
And you know the bottom line is, look, people like to give Kevin Colbert a lot of grief, but man, you better give him a big high five for what he was able to accomplish. Considering where they started and considering where they ended and the fact that they may not be done. Never know. There's a lot of time left, obviously, before the draft. And there's even, you know, those last minute cuts a la Joe Hayden a few years ago, where you never know. They could pick somebody else up as teams make these unexpected cuts. Don't expect it to be super flashy, though, at this point. You know,
no.
It'll be something a little more low key, but they have done a great job in putting together a team that now sits in a much better position going into the draft than they did beforehand.
Yeah, I think there was still, maybe it was Mark Cabali mentioned, I was for some reason Cam Hayward's in my head, maybe even Stephon Tuitt, I don't remember, but there was like...
Both are still possible.
What's that?
Both of those are still possible.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, we were looking at, it was from Albert Breer, and, you know, to come back to it too, because Eric's the one who shared this with us. Yeah. Why am I even giving him credit? He doesn't listen to this. So anyways, the 10 teams with the least space as of yesterday morning, it was the Chiefs. They have less than $1 million. They have $555,000 in cap space. They are by far the most cash strapped. The Patriots at $2.8 million. Well, we'll see how this goes. We were talking about, hey, if you want a veteran quarterback, you're going to have to get Brian Hoyer. There he goes. So we'll see how that goes. They may be in the running to draft a guy too, obviously. So it's going to be a very interesting draft, especially with where the quarterbacks go and what these teams are going to be doing at the top of it. So, and then, you know, who else has been wheeling and dealing? The New Orleans Saints, and they've been signing like,
man, aren't they ever? Yeah,
they're signing all kind of people, man. Malcolm Jenkins, who else did they just grab? They grabbed somebody else in the secondary too, and they grabbed somebody from
Pierre,
the,
did they, was it Pierre Desir that they grabbed, Pierre Desir, or did, was it somebody else? I can't remember,
but they had been making quite a few signings here and there, some bigger, some without as much splash. They got one of these XFL guys too, and it's good seeing some of those guys get signed and getting a chance to maybe play in the NFL later this year, should things resume as normal, as we hope. But the Saints have 9.02 mil. The Steelers come in at fourth with 10.64. And then it goes like the Falcons have like 14, Packers, Cardinals, Ravens, Niners, and Rams. So the Ravens still have a little bit of wiggle room there too. But some of these teams like the Niners and the Rams that have been, you know, floating on some, like, a lot of rookie contracts. Like, George Kittle makes, like, something ridiculous, like, $400,000 or $500,000. He's, like, almost at the bare minimum. Like, some of these things will eventually get addressed, you know, as things even out. And, of course, the cap hit they have for Jared Goff with the Rams is just ungodly. I mean, it's, like, $40 million. You talk about what Ben's is, and it's just, like, geez. But the Chiefs just won a Super Bowl, and you're wondering, like, hey, how can they allow, like, guys to leave, like, Stefan Wisniewski, especially for how, like, like low of a cost he came to Pittsburgh, and you see why. They don't have any money, and they have a lot of money invested in different guys, what, like Frank Clark or Tyrann Mathieu and some guys that they've added like that, other guys that they paid, maybe like Travis Kelce. I'd have to look at their chart, but they still have Patrick Mahomes under a rookie contract. See, I still can't say his name either, but he's under the rookie contract, as we always say. But the Patriots, like, they don't even have Tom Brady. I'm like, I wonder where all their liabilities really are. I'm going to have to look this up. It's quite interesting, to say the least. But you see where the Steelers at least have some of their money tied into guys, you know, Joe Hayden, Steven Nelson, Ben Roethlisberger, Hayward and Tuitt. You know what I mean? Like, guys that are like Pro yep. Bowl or near Pro Bowl caliber, all the offensive linemen like Pouncey and Villanueva and DeCastro, you know, that's like their top 10. And I know the Patriots have a couple of guys like that, but man, it's like, it's got to be, they got to be like chewing or biting their fingernails at this, because they just can't go out. They got to build through the draft, and that's really never been, I guess, the Bill Belichick MO has been, what, you usually grab guys that are like on someone's, you know, trash heap, trash pile, like Corey Dillon is a good example, or they went and they grabbed, I wouldn't say Curtis Martin was like on the trash pile necessarily, but they catch these guys at the right time. They acquired Randy Moss, and he wasn't necessarily cheap, but they get certain pieces. They trade for certain other guys and get them to all fit in. And all we've been seeing all offseason is like a mass exodus out of Boston, including Brady. But all these other guys are going to what? Matt Patricia and who's my other guy? Mike Vrabel. Patriots West and Patriots South. Now they have the same thing the Steelers have had for all these years.
What's that you say? A mass exodus? A mass exodus from New England?
Yes.
Oh, that's a shame.
I know.
Really? That's a shame.
You know what? I had like a half tear that just came from my eye, Brian. I had to wipe it off. I don't know if you could hear it over there, but if you could only see.
That's just really unfortunate. I'm.
It's like that that old commercial. What was it? The Native American guy that had the tear in his eye from the people littering? That's the way I feel right now. Very sad. Very, very sad.
Very, very sad.
It just surprises me that the Falcons have like no money and the Cardinals have like no money. And, you know, these aren't teams that have like consistently been competitive. I mean, to see like the Chiefs, Patriots, Saints, Packers, Ravens, 49ers more recently, they dealt with a lot of injuries, so I give them a pass as far as being competitive. Rams, since they've moved to LA, have really tried to field a competitive team too. It's like those two teams, it's like, what do they got? Who are they paying? You know what I mean? So when people are talking about the Steelers and not having cap space and making all these different splashes, I think it was actually refreshing to see most people. They're pretty much in tune with a lot of the moves that were made. Wisniewski, Derek Watt, Eric Ebron, Chris Wormley, tagging Bud Dupree has been one of the hot button topics. And we'll see, you know, does he sign it? Does he only play a year? Do they rip it up and make a long-term thing? We got a long deadline for that yet. That's still like in June, you know, so we'll find out. But I think we're going to look at more offense here with some of our burning questions, and we'll come back to, you know, defense and maybe even the old special teams at some time. The old special teams, Brian.
Yeah.
Telling you, man, the Letterman. I haven't watched Letterman, and, you know, I know he's not on anymore, but it's got to have been like 10, 15 years since I was like a regular viewer of his show. It's just funny how that sticks with you.
Shame on you. That's all I could say. Shame on you.
You know, we talk about a lot of things. You know, there's a lot to be said about quarterbacks and everything, and we'll talk about that in a second, but I think we want to go right into this part. What kind of impact the Steelers didn't have a quarterback's coach last year? And I think that was something, like, we talked about, like, them not having like Roosevelt Nix in the last episode, not having a fullback, and Derek Watt coming in and that being a big part of what they do. But how, I mean, you look at, I don't know, this is what I'm trying to juggle in my head. You had Peasy coaching the linebackers, and then all of a sudden they removed him, gave Keith Butler a little more like responsibility, because, you know, he went from linebacker coach to defensive coordinator. Bud never had him as a position coach. All of a sudden he does. He flourishes. Well, Randy Fickner didn't necessarily have the same kind of success there managing as an offensive coordinator and dealing with the quarterbacks wearing two hats last year. So they bring in a quarterbacks coach. And I also got to wonder too, with some of the drops we saw from, you know, different wide receivers and whatnot. I know Dante Moncrief, a big one, but geez, oh man, I mean, everybody catching a ball dropped some balls last year. They shouldn't have, especially early on in the season. The impact of losing Darryl Drake, Ray Sherman being there as, you know, an interim basis and just kind of taking the job for a period of time. And now, you know, they've hired in two guys, Matt Canada, and now who's the wide receivers coach? Because it wasn't the darn guy from South Carolina. We got bamboozled on that. Was it Jericho Cotri or was it somebody else that got signed?
No, it's not. It wasn't Cotri. It was an ex-player.
Yeah, I'll grab that in a second because now all of a sudden I drew a giant blank in my mind. But what kind of impact will this have on the Steelers' offense? Well, I mean, we're always talking about Ben coming back and everything else, but having these position coaches in place for the entirety of the off-season workout programs through camp, preseason, et cetera, what kind of impact do you think that'll have on the Steelers' offense in 2020?
Well, I look at the quarterback's coach specifically, I think, is going to be beneficial for the from the standpoint of the – wow, I must have set off an alarm. the younger guys, right? I think what they looked at last year was, you know, Randy is fine for Ben, and Ben knows what he's doing, and he doesn't need an excessive amount of coaching. But I also think they saw that the offense looked a little bit stale, and that maybe there was more hardcore coaching that needed to occur of the younger guys. And so I think where this is really going to benefit is maybe not fully anything that you see on a game-to-game basis, but with a caveat, because I'm going to come back to that. But where I think the biggest strength will be in potentially developing Mason Rudolph and anybody else, Paxton Lynch, Duck Hodges, whoever, as their growth goes. That's where I think there's a big possibility here. However, the flip side of that is this is a guy who is one of those, very creative minds, as they say, with offense. He does different things, and maybe he'll be a part of getting Randy a little more exciting in his play calling. We will see. I don't think you can overstate the fact that we did not have what you would consider to be, a consistent coaching tree, so to speak, for the wide receivers. You know, at the beginning of the year, they lose Darryl Drake, completely, again, surprising and shocking, had to be devastating for some of these guys who have worked with him for years. He was well-loved and beloved by the team. I think, it just... having a guy come in who is the guy and has has that title and will be able to work with them consistently, I think will be beneficial, especially it's the same voice throughout minis, throughout OTAs, assuming we have any of those, and through training camp, as opposed to, one voice and then another voice later on. So I think these will be beneficial changes, and while I expect to see more from the wide receiver group based on this than I do from really the quarterback group, it won't surprise me if the offense gets a little more exciting because of that new quarterback's coach.
I can't say it any better than that. There's no duel there, obviously. The only duel is that, I think it was difficult. It's got to be difficult at any time when you're managing so much stuff at the same time. And that's sure. Where I think Matt Canada is going to help. You could delegate some of that stuff from Randy Fichtner. And by all means, it wasn't that the Steelers weren't prepared. I think they honestly just felt, we don't need to add another guy to this mix and, PO our quarterback, our franchise quarterback who didn't like the previous OC. It's always been his buddy, the quarterback's coach, right? Because Bruce Arians was like in the same area. And I think Tom Clements was one of the guys way back when too. And did Wiz come up as a QB guy too? I'm not sure, but I
think so. Ike Hilliard, by the way. Hilliard.
Oh, yeah. I was getting there in a second. I was looking at how, fairly inexperienced with the team, I should say. Team experience here, like Sean Surrett is, entering year five as the offensive line coach. James Daniel, 13 years as a tight ends coach. Eddie Faulkner, the running backs coach, he had a lot to deal with last year in his first year, lending a hand as the, position coach there on the offense for the Steelers. They have an assistant offensive line coach, Adrian Clem. So you add Matt Canada, and now Ike Hilliard. And Ike Hilliard comes, you know, Ike Hilliard's no one to sneeze at. He's got a lot of accolades himself as a player. 546 receptions, 6,397 yards receiving, 35 touchdowns. He played in 161 games. That's a lot of games to have for a pro career. It's pretty good. By the way, you know what? Just a random thought. Al Woods going to the Jaguars. There's a guy that was with the Steelers for like a minute, and he continues to just grind it out, man. He's been around. He was a fourth round pick of the Saints, and then of course the Steelers had him as like a practice squad guy. 2010, he ended up with the Buccaneers, then the Seahawks, then back for the Steelers for a couple of years. Titans, Colts, then to the Seahawks again, and now with the Jaguars. I mean, I wish I would have said how many games he's played here, but you know what? Going 10, 11 years strong here for someone that isn't necessarily like, you know, the big household brand name that you see, you know, on the marquee or whatever, kind of just being a role and situational guy, has really carved out one heck of a career. So my hat's off to him. But sure. You know, Ike Hilliard, you know, he played with the Giants and the Buccaneers, and there may have been a connection there with Mike Tomlin, too. You know what I mean? Some familiarity.
Down there with the Bucks,
yep. He's been an NFL assistant and or wide receivers coach for the Dolphins twice, 2 tenures with the Redskins, also with the Bills. So he's been around. He's been with different coaching staffs. And, you know, we'll see what he's going to be able to make of some of these young men going forward, too. You know what? I don't think I had this on my I was thinking about it, and I didn't add it to our little list. We were actually somewhat prepared today, Brian. But I was thinking, you know, I'm thinking here, you know, you were talking, you didn't think Juju could be, or Juju was maybe a wide receiver one. And I know you thought, hey, you know, he's got to play in the slot to really, you know, make his money. And I'm like, Antonio Brown kind of did the same thing too, and they moved him around, and this, as the Steelers will do. But I was starting to, it's got me thinking, and it was all because of a dumb comment somebody made about wide receiver five not being strong if it's Ryan Switzer. And I'm like, you know, how many times do you have a five wide receiver set? You usually don't. You usually have a tight end and a running back. At the most, the Steelers are more prone to probably have three guys on the field. Even four wide receiver sets seemed kind of foreign until Randy Fickner kind of took over there. And they had like six, you know, very capable wide receivers in order to do that, which made a world of difference. And that's the only reason I think we ever saw five on the field at the same time when you had both Eli and Switzer healthy 2 years ago. You still had what? AB, you still had Juju, and who's the other guy that I'm trying to think of that was part of that mix? Somebody. I don't think James Washington was here just yet, but maybe it might have been Martavis. It was something like that, but I digress. It's not that important. Just, you know, one of the things here is I'm trying to think to myself, you know, as far as wide receiver one goes, maybe it doesn't matter if he's a bona fide wide receiver one because he could really make do playing in these different type of positions. Maybe we should be thinking about who the two and threes are.
All right. I'm going to start this off by saying what I said was I don't know if Juju is a wide receiver one or not. I don't know. Do I think he could be? Sure. Do I know that he is? No. Did he show me that he could be yet? Not yet. And the point I was making is he makes the most productivity coming out of the slot. That's where he's made his bones, so to speak, so far. Now, that being said, your point of is it as important to have a true one as it is to have solid twos and threes? Yes and no. you know, the one thing that does occur if you have a true one is they, of course, take on the majority of the coverage. They, you know, they get the attention from the opposing defense, which if you have quality two and three receivers, allows them to make some hay, so to speak. But the other side of that coin is, let's say you have a one who's not necessarily the best one. You know, he's not an Antonio Brown type, right? He's not going to demand double coverage all the time. And you feel like you've got maybe as a defense, you've got a number one cornerback who can take on this number one receiver. Well, then, yeah, having good, better than good two and three receivers allows you to then take advantage of that depth level. And that it's always going to be good. I would certainly take a decent one and higher quality twos and threes than I would the best one in the world and then subpar two and threes, because it's too easy to bottle up your offense that way. You need the options, right? And I do think that that's a little bit of what the Steelers are looking at with this. The problem was there was nobody who really could take advantage of a mismatch last year. And that our biggest problem is we really don't know how much of that is due to the wide receiver play and how much of it is due to quarterback play with Ben not being there. And so we're going to find that out. I do think I have a lot of hope for James Washington. I've got a lot of hope for Deontay Johnson. I like the room. I still want them to draft a wide receiver because this is a really deep draft in wide receivers. And the kind of wide receiver I want them to get is a Martavis Bryant type, somebody who is a deep threat. And that's what you expect them to be, right? So that, you have that dynamic on the field, because I don't really think they have it right now.
Which is, fair enough. I have the same kind of almost concerns like you were saying about Juju, actually, with James Washington. We're starting to get into the territory of show me something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a shame that we're at that point with a second round pick. But you know what? It's got to be consistent. He's got to do something somewhat big. Now, I'll tell you about somebody who did some stuff that was big, and he didn't have necessarily a whole lot of time with the team last year. But you know I like Deion Kane, man. 6'2", yeah. 202. And it's just one of those things where he was in six games, only five catches for 72 yards. But some of those catches, one for 35, one for 22, moving the chains, getting some of the yardage, and he's a big target that Ben might like. He's going to have some competition, as you said. I do think that they bring somebody else in order to, push these guys. And I think I think Deontay Johnson's spot is a little more secure than James Washington at this point for playing time, because like we said, how many times do they run four or five wide receivers? So that third guy, maybe something where somebody's rotating in and out. They could even be looking at the future, depending on what they do with Juju's contract, but I would have to think that they try and keep him under lock and key. With that said, and you mentioned it all kind of already, we go back again, and I know this was a whole podcast topic, but I'm not going to say the entire quarterback situation, but how comfortable, are we maybe with the backup quarterback situation? In my opinion, you've got three guys that have NFL experience now. You have one that had a lot of pedigree coming out of college with Mason Rudolph. You have one that was a former first-round pick with even more pedigree in Paxton Lynch, and he's going to be fighting maybe for the third spot on the roster with an undrafted guy that became everyone's hero with the fancy nickname of Duck.
I will answer this question as honestly as I can. Am I comfortable? No. I'm comfortable in the sense that as long as Ben is healthy and can play, I'm happy. If Ben is not going to be able to play, do I think we're going to have a great season? No. It's that simple. So am I comfortable? I'm not comfortable. I'm not looking at this as in the event that if one of these guys is being asked to carry the load, do I feel like they're definitely going to be the guy to get them to the playoffs? I don't see that guy on the team right now, and I've said that in the past. If I have to trust one of them to win one game or get us through a game, yeah, then I'm a little more comfortable, all right? Then I feel like, all right, I can deal with that. But at the same time, do I think there was something the Steelers should have done to address it? Nope, because they don't have the money to go sign a higher-end veteran backup, even with the wizardry of Kevin Colbert. And even if they did, even those guys are not going to win you playoff games. That's, they're not any better than what we have. So it's kind of a barbed question, so to speak. Am I comfortable? I'm only comfortable as long as Ben Roethlisberger is the starting quarterback. But am I thinking they should have done something else to do it? And I know we got another question that's going to lead into this in a little bit as well, because mm-hmm. the rumor mills have been flying. Do I think they should have done something else? No, not really.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at too, Brian, is if these guys are spot starters, you know, a couple games here or there, I'm not looking for anybody to shoulder the load for the whole season. I'm not looking for the starter of the future. If that happens to come out of the current crop, hey, so be it. That would be a welcome change or a welcome addition or something surprising that we didn't see coming. I'm going to come back around. I had the one question you kind of led into it before this, and it still has to deal with a backup, and it's kind of I don't even want to say it. This is just,
I know.
We've been talking about not drafting a quarterback. I know that was part of this too. And it's like, if you draft a guy, how are you going to assume that somebody you take in the middle round is going to be any different than what they already have there? They could even be worse. There is a chance they could be better, but I mean, it's, you take a look at what's everybody around the league. It's not a consistent story. It's not even a consistent story when you take guys in the first round when people are reaching for quarterbacks. Now you want to start reaching for backups. Well, you can't reach for Mariota. Thank God he's gone and making like some absurd amount of money with the Raiders. But Jameis Winston, you complain about a guy with Ben Roethlisberger throwing too many interceptions. He only threw 17. Jameis is the only guy in NFL history to be a 30-30 guy. 30 touchdowns and 30 picks in the same season. This never happened before, and that's what you're looking at, and the light bulb just has not really gone off for him, and they brought in, like, you know, 58-year-old Tom Brady to come and be the starter there over a guy that's, you know, should be in his prime, right, or not even entering his prime. He's still young. He's still a young man, you know what I mean? And then you also have Cam Newton is, you know, a trade bait or even, you know, topic of being released. I just don't see the Steelers making any of these moves here. You know, especially for what these guys are. I don't know that Winston's going to command the type of money that he wants, but Cam Newton, this is a guy that's going to be paid top dollar. He was a Superman. He was like a, you know, like a league MVP, Super Bowl, you know, whatever kind of MVP type guy. He was playing on that type of level. And now, you know, with all this other stuff going around, you can't even give the guy a physical to know what kind of shape he's in, let alone the fact that Cam Newton has never been a very highly accurate quarterback. He reminds me of Big Ben because he's a big guy. He doesn't get the same kind, he doesn't get calls, you know, for roughing the passer, stuff like that. Takes a lot of shots. Mobile, but then again, he doesn't complete like 60% of his passes. None of these guys are coming to Pittsburgh, and I just, you know, I really want to close the book on this because it was like it all started with some random guy for a blog. It's not even the actual Sports Illustrated site posting something out there alluding to it. And you know what? He may have not even been the one that even brought it up originally. It may have been commentary on it, but it's because it was seen there and filtered through that website that it reached the masses, and then you even got people like on these regular sports programs, ESPN, Fox, NFL Network, whatever, actually discussing this. And I'm just kind of like, learn something about the salary cap and how this team operates first before opening your pie hole.
I will say this. Let's say Jameis Winston never finds a contract and nobody decides they want to sign him. And the Steelers throw a vet minimum or some ridiculously no number at him just to say, sure, we'll bring you into camp. And then let's say Jared Goff gets hurt. Now we can trade him, right? Hey, that's the way it should be. Look, would I be opposed to them bringing in Jameis Winston if it costs them no money? Sure, why not? If it costs them no money, why would I care? But he's not. They're not going to, because he's not going to take no money. Cam Newton, when he gets released, if he gets released, is not going to take no money. You know, they're going to want to get paid. They're going to want to get paid more than $10 million a year. The Steelers don't have that kind of money. And it's never going to happen. And just as a plug for an upcoming show, you know, we're going to do a mock draft show, as I know you know. We're going to do a mock draft show, and anybody who drafts a quarterback for the Steelers in the mock draft show will be ridiculed heavily.
Excommunicated.
I'm just letting you know. Yeah, maybe excommunicated, but definitely ridiculed and made to be shamed. And they may be shunned as well. They don't need to do those things, and even if they were flush with capital, I don't know that it makes any difference. What are you going to do with a guy who, A, wants to start in Jameis Winston? He doesn't want to be a backup. He's going to come in. Do you need the drama of having a guy who wants to be the starter come in to be your backup? Is he really going to understand his role? Has Jameis Winston not proved he has a little bit of hot-headedness in him in the past? It's not the kind of thing you want. Cam Newton doesn't want to come in and be Ben's backup. So, you know, the idea that they're even going to think about it is ridiculous. You know, people like to dream. What can I tell you? But let's dream about other things. Dream about, I don't know, beaches and sunsets or something. Don't dream about stupid quarterbacks that aren't going to come here.
Well, if you were a dreamer, you know, it's...
I'm not the only one.
No. You got me all over the place now. I'm not going to start singing or bursting into song here, but Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, I think some people see this and, you know, I know somebody like made an off-cuff comment just because it's like, oh, you're linking this because they're black quarterbacks or whatever. But Mike Tomlin has had like a, there's been a stereotype, not necessarily Charlie Batch because he hasn't been the most mobile guy, but when you look at Dennis Dixon, Byron Leftwich, Michael Vick, I mean, I guess Jameis is somewhat mobile. You know what I mean? I know he's not necessarily the runner. Cam Newton certainly is. But those guys fit the bill. But the Steelers have, you know, they've taken other guys, let's say Bruce Gradkowski, Mike Tomczak, guys like that in the past, Tommy Maddox that have
Byron Leftwich.
Well, Byron Leftwich also, yeah, Byron Leftwich and Michael Vick also fit the same role. I'm just trying to throw a little more mix in here so people aren't just saying, I'm just saying this because they're, you know, African-American passers or whatever, you know what I mean, to fit the bill there. But the Steelers have also, you know, gone and taken guys that have started maybe 25, 30 games in the NFL for a backup role. But I don't think at this point in their careers that Winston or Cam Newton are in the same level of, you know, maybe being accepting of or thinking that they're not a starting NFL quarterback, or at least going to a team where they could compete for that spot, where you kind of have this delineated to Big Ben. You also have a lot of money invested in Big Ben, where I don't see any of that happening right now. But just to even throw it out there, if all things were possible, I think they'll continue to try and develop who they have and try and roll with Ben and not cause any controversy, just like you said. Speaking of, that's another burning question, too, is like everybody's like, well, did you see what Ben? Ben looked old and tired when he played the Patriots last year. Yeah, because you know what? Vance McDonald and James Conner didn't drop passes in the same way, and Juju in the same way that Moncrief dropped like four. Come on. You know, you go back and look at the stats, you got to look at how just miserable the offense was, period. He was, you know, it wasn't like he wasn't putting the ball on people. Other people were failing him as well, which leads me to, do we think that Ben will ever throw for 5,000 yards again in his career? I am going to say no, Brian. I'll lead off with that just because I think they're going to hand the ball off a lot more with the stable of running backs they have, and try not to, you know, make his arm fall off, especially after going through all of this rehab.
My answer is, oh God, I hope not.
You know, that's also a very good, 4,000 maybe, 3,800,
sure.
5,000. I hope not too. You're right.
If he throws for 5,000 yards again, it is going to be because they're playing from behind a lot. And that means the defense has fallen off, which I don't see happening. It means that they have a necessity to score a lot of points, right? And that shouldn't be the case. This is a team built to win on the concepts of ball control and defense. That's the way that they look, right? That's the way they're designed to be. Ben needs to be a game manager to a certain extent. Yes, he could still do some exciting Ben Roethlisberger type things, and yes, he's still a Hall of Fame level quarterback who will be able to put the ball where it needs to go when you need him to make those throws. But he should not be dropping back 40 to 50 times a game, which is what you kind of need to do if you're going to throw for 5,000 yards. So no, please, no. I'm quite content about 4,000. That's fine. I'm fine. If he's always in the 3,700 range, I'm fine. I think the best outcome we could have is Ben Roethlisberger throws for 3,900 yards, and you know, the Steelers are 14-2.
Well, not only that, if he's not throwing for 5,000, it means he's not throwing 600 attempts and yeah, opening up for any interceptions. We still have, like I said, a very young wide receiver core, and he may be adding another young guy to it because it doesn't look like they're going to have anyone else veteran. And even the veteran they had last year, that didn't work out. In fact, at least one of Rudolph's picks was tipped by Moncrief as well, you know, before he was sent packing. So, but just like on that same note, it's, you know, that's the way I feel. But in the same aspect, it's like, I think a lot of people have written off James Conner this upcoming year. I don't know about you, or I know how I feel. I'll give you this one first. Have you written off James Conner for 2020? And what kind of year do you think he can return to form? because I can tell you one thing. I don't see the Steelers doing anything contract-wise for him until they know he can play almost – if he plays 14 games at something, but he can't go out there and play 9 or 10 and expect a new contract.
Let me put it this way. I have not written James Conner off for 2020 because I don't think the Steelers have the ability to write James Conner off for 2020. I've written him off for 2021.
Yes.
That can change. Look, what James Conner needs to prove is that he can be durable, that he can be available, that he is not going to consistently be on the sidelines due to injury. Can he return to form? Absolutely. He's a tough running back. He's a talented running back. Can he be the guy that carries the load? Yes, he can, but he's got to show that his body can take the kind of punishment that his running style tends to elicit. And so have I written him off for 2020? Absolutely not. If we go anywhere in 2020, as I said, to prevent Ben from having to go back and throw the ball all the time, we need a consistent running game. And whether that's James Conner or Benny Snell or somebody else they draft, I don't know. But I would like James Conner to have a bounce back year. I'd like for James Conner to be comeback player of the year, except I think Ben might be that guy. So we'll see.
Yeah, you would hope that Ben is the guy without a doubt in that spot. So I guess that leaves us only to one other question here. The burning question is, we've already seen some odds come out. They're already betting. We haven't even had a draft or anything else, but we already have like some bookies that think, you know, there's going to be, I don't know. Yeah, I just thought of something and I always get scatterbrained, but I think ESPN, they have like those betting shows that are always on and are talking about odds and lines. And it's like, there's nothing else going on. How can we have odds or lines or even have these shows? But they did have the Ocho the other day, so I guess that counts. But
yeah, there you go.
The odds makers are listing, they have the Ravens, the Chiefs, the 49ers, so you get to the two Super Bowl teams, and then the Saints. Those are the only four teams. They have the Steelers in a fifth at best odds when it comes to how many wins for a higher over-under win total in 2020. Starting to think, what is the over-under, the number of wins you could expect the Steelers this year? We were way off. We were looking at how many last year? I think me and you were like at 11 maybe, 11-ish,
yeah,
like 11 and 11, 5.
12.
That's going to get all thrown off now with these 17 games, because now as 11 wins is actually worse than 12 wins in a 17-game season. You'd be 12 and 5 then, right?
Yeah, and I'm still curious as to who that 17th game is against.
You know, I started to think about that too, as to whether or not they could get rid of, you know, you think of it this way. They have two like kind of almost random games the way it goes, and the way it fills is with the other division, two divisions you're not playing right now. I was just wondering if they couldn't do like home and home swaps against everybody in the division. You just play your division three times instead of twice, which would be absolutely crazy. You know, that's I'll toss that idea out there. I don't know that that's going to be. That odd number is really going to, I think, screw with kind of the harmony that you had with the way the schedule was set up to date. You knew who all the opponents were basically going to be, et cetera, et cetera. The only other way that can happen is if you're playing maybe the one division in your conference, whoever you're playing. Who the Steelers got this year? AFC, which AFC?
AFC East.
East?
Like, yeah.
So the Patriots, or let me see, the Patriots won it. Second place would have been the Bills, so they would be playing the Bills.
I'm sorry, NFC East. I was thinking NFC East.
Well, what about the AFC? Who do we got in the AFC?
In the AFC, don't they just have the a certain level of teams?
Well, no, you always play. It's always like one. Hold on, I'm pulling this up right now because I'm having a brain fart.
South. It's the South. Titans, Jags.
Yeah,
Colts,
here we go.
Texans.
Here we go. So based on where everybody fell, the Steelers were second in the division in the AFC North. I would think they could play the Colts home and home. Maybe that's the way it works. You play somebody in the same conference division or whatever, and that's how you could keep it all balanced. Without having
who
to, you
was
know,
second in the West last year
in the
AFC West, was it the Chargers?
Oh darn you! You're really throwing me a monkey wrench right now. I can't remember. Let's see here. I'm going to find it for you if it ever loads. Let's see. AFC West was the Broncos. They were 7-9.
Okay, so there you go. Breaker. That's the other second. They don't play anybody right now in the West. You know, so, oh no, they do play the Broncos. Never mind.
Yeah.
So they're already playing that. I don't know what the hell they do. They find another team and they put them in there. I don't dislike your home and home idea of, you know, you pick one of the, you know, the conference teams that's not a division rival and you just do a home and home with them. That's fine with me. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because, you know, we have our opponents, right? We supposedly know who we're playing, but now there's this bonus game and where does that fit in?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't plan on talking about it, so I got tongue-tied here. But basically how it's always worked is with the 16-game schedule, six of your games are all within your own division. So, you know, that's going to be the Ravens, Browns, and Bengals. Then you're going to play four teams from an AFC division and four teams from an NFC division. So that this year it's the AFC South and the NFC Least you get the Cowgirls and all that. So it's like, do you play? I think there's more value in playing. I kind of liked my idea with the home and home. So, okay, if they're playing the AFC South, you're going to play the comparable team. The comparable team actually isn't the Colts. The comparable team would have been the Titans were in second place. So you're going to play the second place team, which is which you're going to anyways because you're playing that division, but maybe a home and home instead. So that way, you know, everybody's matched up because this is the way the schedule's built for everybody else, and then that just takes care of that extra game there. And there's no, you know, major rocket science to this, it should be the same kind of quality opponent on paper. You end up playing them twice, and it's an interconference game, which is going to help for, you know, tiebreakers and things like that. So with all that said, with or without the extra game this year or extra game next year, playoffs this year, extra playoff team this year, 17 games next year, I believe, right? I think.
I don't remember, to be honest. I can't. And because the second part of that is where is that game, home or away, and who gets the benefit? Is it flip-flopped every year? One year you're away, one year you're home, because you're going to now play an imbalanced schedule where you have, with 17 games, you're going to have one year where you have more home games and one year where you have more away games.
Well, I've always said, you know, college football does that too, where they go like with an off or neutral site. And they could always do something like that too. I know it's always beneficial, but then you have teams that are going to London and going to Mexico. So I was like, you know, if they had like one week in there, if everybody did it like a neutral site game. So
2021, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's 20, and the latest is 2023. I pulled that up too. I'm not completely losing it, but you know, we went right off track here. So we're counting on 16 games this year. How many of those are the Steelers going to win? Tomlin's never not won at least eight, so I have him in for at least double digits, Brian. I was just, and you know, I was pulling up those opponents, and I'm looking at who or how well are those teams going to be. That's tough because the Colts now have, you know, Philip Rivers, and Broncos are making changes. Who knows? The Cowboys are paying people like $100 million. The Bills have rebounded and been a better team this year too. So they got some really quality opponents on the schedule. Eagles.
Yeah, they do.
Titans, Redskins. So that's kind of where I have them. I still have them in the 10 to 11 point kind of range here so far. Obviously the odds makers like them a lot right now. I guess we'll have to see what everybody does in the draft to see where everyone falls.
Yeah, there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts with this, you know, looking at the schedule as it stands right now. Because you got a lot of teams that played very well last year that looked to be on the upswing, right? But you never know. You need consistency to say that. And a single season sample isn't always enough to know that team is going to continue that upswing. Same thing can be said on downswings as well. You know, one of these teams has a bounce back year. You never know. I kind of am leaning towards 10, but my hedge would be, I won't be surprised. I think they'll have a winning season. Again, this is the caveat that Ben Roethlisberger is the quarterback for the entire season. Let me be clear about that. But if he is, I think they could have a 10 win season, maybe even an 11 win season. And if things really go their way, they could potentially have a 12 win season. I don't see them necessarily getting to 14. I don't expect them to be the number one seed. But you know, if the defense grows, and the defense gets better, can you even imagine saying that? If the defense gets better mm-hmm. than it was last year, I don't know, man. Because you know you're not going to have to score that many points, and if Ben Roethlisberger is your quarterback, you're going to score some points.
Yeah.
So
I
don't know.
I totally agree. It'll keep them fresh, and you know the only thing they got to worry about is that the Ravens were the best team in the AFC last year. So if they can repeat their success, it's going to be a dogfight. But the one thing I will say is, you get seven teams in the playoffs. There's only one year. If this had been the scenario all along in Mike Tomlin's tenure, they would have only missed out one year, and they would have missed out on a tiebreaker, as we noted. Yep. I believe, was it the Houston Texans, I think, was the tiebreaker, or it was Tennessee? It was one of those darn teams. Now I can't remember. But, yeah, they would have made the playoffs every other year. So definitely see them as a playoff contender. Brian, I think that's going to wrap it for us today, man. Hey, you know what? This worked out. It worked out pretty well. So hopefully everyone keep leaving your comments. We definitely like the ones where you say, hey, love the show. Keep it up. We will do. That helps keep us going. That's fuel for us, fuel for the fire here.
I will say I'm slightly jealous. Everyone loves you. No one loves me, and I'm sad.
Oh, here we go. He's pandering, folks. Poor Brian.
I love everyone.
Send him some love. Well, somebody said you had silky smooth voice one time too. So
yeah, but you know what? That wasn't even on our podcast. That was when I was guesting on someone else's.
Serves you right. Anyways, but Brian, thanks once again for joining me today, buddy.
Always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, always a pleasure for me as well. Folks, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. We're catching up to some of those as we deal with all the uncertainty and chaos that's out there. Hopefully, this is a nice departure for you from the normal world. And unfortunately, now we're at the tail end of our show, and we have reminded you of it, that you get a return back to that. So until next time, we'll have some more coming for you later in the week. My name's Joe. His name's Brian. Until next time, as we encourage everyone always out there, be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.